League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Starting with this week,
Spotify. No, we just comment. Had a Spotify update. Yeah.
No, none of them.
No, we review
three. Yeah. We reviews. I put up two fingers, three. But it's three. Well, we're getting so many reviews now. 5-star reviews. Go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. We're getting so many of those reviews now that I need to read out more.
Start going through them.
Yeah,
yeah.
You need to start chugging
through.
Pick
up the pace a bit. Yeah.
Exactly. So this one, the first one, it says this podcast always manages to lift my mood and make me chuckle, and I've gained so many fun facts from listening. Keep up the good work, boys.
Hell yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah, nice
one. The second one says science. Oh, I got that wrong. It says, if science isn't your thing, listen anyway. Good advice. I love science, but the Sci Guys make science so entertaining, I challenge anyone to not enjoy it. Corey does an amazing job of explaining the science in simple terms, and I enjoy listening to the Sci Guys make intelligent conversation. It's like being on the edge of an interesting conversation at a party. I wish I could chip in, especially when they're talking about psychology, my degree. You'll have listened to every episode before you know it.
That's really cool that we have. Like, I never fail to be pleased and just amazed when we are entertaining two people who have degrees in the things we are talking about. Like, that's really cool.
Yeah, it's honestly the scariest thing when someone says, hey, I do a PhD in this. If comment starts like that, I brick it immediately. But if you enjoy our intelligent conversation, which thank you very much, you can check out Sci Guys After Dark over on our Patreon, a brand new show that we've got where it's just intelligent conversation.
Oh, I was going to say less intelligent.
Yeah. Don't tell them that.
Oh, okay. Well, no more intelligent, definitely.
And the last review we've got today says, great pod, 5 stars, as always. This topic is always interesting and the hosts make it super funny too. Definitely my favorite podcast.
I like being called the host.
Right, yeah.
Or the hosts, yeah.
I like having a title.
It's a good title, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It feels powerful. It's like, you know, like the Grandmaster from Marvel.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Or the Pope.
Exactly.
From Earth.
The host makes me feel like... I am a creature that is like has a bunch of parasites on it.
Yeah. Well, you are.
Well, yeah, the audience are the parasites and we are the hosts. No.
We're trying to get good reviews, Luke.
I mean, you literally have a bunch of little creatures in you that are helping you and using you.
And
so
an
you
audience.
Are the host.
And an audience.
Yeah.
Okay.
Parasiting off of my ramblings.
Parasocializing off of your ramblings.
Oh, God, please, man.
And the question before we jump into the show, I want you to answer this, not you two, but get to the comments in YouTube and answer this. If you're listening, doesn't matter. Head to YouTube and answer the question. Have you joined our Discord? We've got a Discord. Just join us.
It is a question.
Have you joined our Discord? Because if you've not, you should check it out. We've got a little community there. We've got some cool stuff that's going to be starting soon. You should definitely check it out.
If you're watching this on YouTube and you haven't joined our Discord and you don't intend to, I just want you to own up to it. Just write no in the comments.
And if you're honest.
Yeah, just be honest. It's fine.
We don't mind. You know, we appreciate honesty.
Yeah.
We appreciate Discord
server.
I'm going
to go to the comments and write no from myself.
You're in the server. You built it.
Oh, yeah. I'm still going to do that.
Shall we start the show?
He's going to leave. Let's start the show.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jemp and Luke Gutforth.
Yes, you are, sir.
Howdy.
This week, we're sparking a conversation about boredom.
Oh.
Finally! I think I literally asked you to do this episode at one point, like the science of boredom.
Oh, this isn't the science of boredom.
Oh.
If you had
it's going to be quite boring, isn't
if
it?
If you had looked at the episode title on YouTube or your podcast app before coming here, you would know that the title is The Shocking Science of Boredom. We're not just talking about boredom itself. We're talking about some shocking science in relation to boredom. So not so boring. No, it's not. Well, depends.
Hmm.
Well, let the audience decide, really. Mm. You'll feel bored every now and then, but certainly not while listening to this podcast, of course. But there are only so many episodes of Sci Guys. We can't be there for everyone all the time. At some point, you're going to run out and you might become bored.
I actually haven't been bored in years. I know that's a weird thing to say. I have not been bored in years.
Really?
Like, Noah sometimes talks about how bored he is. And I honestly, I'm like, I can't remember what being bored is like.
Actually, no.
When Noah's bored, he's probably understimulated.
I agree. Yeah, of course. But yeah. I know I have been bored, but I haven't been bored in a long time.
Really?
It's really weird. I wonder why.
I'm bored all of the time. Really? Everything bores me.
Are you bored now?
No.
Okay, that's good. Wow, we're so stimulating.
I'm borderline.
Oh.
I'm just busy.
I felt good about myself for a moment.
Borderline.
I don't have time to be bored.
I understand.
Laugh at my joke.
No, I'm not going to.
Oh, you're bored. Jam, what have you got to say?
I've said it.
I didn't hear it.
I just said I'm busy. I don't have time to be bored.
I think you can be bored whilst busy.
I'm bored whilst busy all the time.
Okay, what's so shocking about boredom then?
So what would you do if you were bored out of your mind and all you had was a button that gave you an electric shock? Would you press it? In 2014, scientists set out to find the answer.
And the answer is yes.
Well, it depends.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll get to it. So first off, what is boredom?
Understimulation?
Well, not...
having nothing to do and not liking it very much.
I feel like those are both causes, potential causes of boredom, but they're not necessarily boredom in and of itself. You know what I mean?
No, I don't, but I'm sure you'll tell me.
I probably will tell you, yeah. Mm. So there isn't a definition for boredom that is sort of accepted by every scientist or even most scientists, really.
Helpful, yeah.
Well, it's a hard thing to sort of define, really, isn't it? You know, it's this feeling that you get where you want more stuff to do. You feel like you've not got enough stuff to do, or you've not got enough meaning, you know? It's a hard feeling to describe. How would you both describe boredom?
So if you've got this part of your brain that is like trying to make a story out of what you're doing, then which is called like the narrator, I suppose. Then I suppose it's like that thing is incredibly dissatisfied with the current situation, and is trying to motivate you towards doing something else, maybe. It's like appraising your current moment and going, this is not what I want it to be. But then in a different way to like fear, which is like a different type of reaction to the current moment, right?
Yeah, I feel like, and this isn't what I've got written down in front of me. This is just sort of my own thoughts here. It's kind of an unfulfillment, right?
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Like, and Jam, you say boredom is not having anything to do. And I would fully disagree with you because I could have so much to do. I could literally be sitting scrolling through TV channels. Not that I watch TV anymore, but you know, scrolling through Netflix, right? And then thinking, I am so bored. I have so much to do. I could watch any of these things.
I guess doing something you don't want to do could also be boring.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's what's interesting about boredom. There's lots of different types that are kind of under the same, you know, sort of feeling. And I feel like because boredom is a feeling, you know, like being happy or angry or scared, like you said, it's not usually sort of described as being similar to those feelings. Because we think of boredom more in what causes it rather than what it feels like and what it is, right? You don't say, oh, happy is when someone gets you a free drink.
When I'm smiling.
That's what happy is, you know? That's something that can cause happiness.
Yeah.
But it's not what happy is.
Yeah.
So, as I've said, there's no universally accepted definition of boredom. But it's not the same as apathy or depression. That much is clear. Those are different things. Even though... I guess depression and apathy kind of feed into boredom as well. If you're depressed, you can be incredibly bored. Mm. Just absolutely bored out your mind. But it is generally an unpleasant feeling. It comes from usually a sort of lack of stimulation or even in some cases sort of like an overstimulation as well. Like if you think about it, like if you are, you find it sort of understimulating, but the work is too difficult. Do you know what I mean? So if you're, say, in school and you're doing maths and it's just really difficult maths, you could get really bored. But equally, if it's really easy maths, you could also get bored.
Right. So it's about straddling that like kind of middle ground between novelty and comfort, where like the thing you're doing is like difficult enough that it's stimulating, but also not too difficult that you're like, well, there's no point.
Exactly.
You gotta have that Goldilocks factor.
Yeah,
and then the things you're doing.
And that's something that comes into sort of making content and trying to grow as a sort of creator in any sort of way, right? So if you're, let's say, even for this podcast, if we were to launch a completely new sort of show next week, it would still have to have a lot of ties to SciGuys. Do you know what I mean? Otherwise, SciGuys, people that like this show would be like, oh, this is too new. I don't like it. They wouldn't.
You think?
I mean, as in, there would be, like, you need to straddle that line of sort of novelty and, you know what I mean? Like, you need to straddle that line. So if you were to do something that was totally different, it'd be too new and people would feel uncomfortable and not want to watch it, you know?
Our brains are so, like, simple sometimes.
Yeah. But, like, if you were to ease into it.
Yeah, yeah. You can slowly diverge.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually.
And it's really frustrating, right? Mm. Like, you can't just, this is what happens. This is advice I've given to friends who have tried to steer their YouTube channel in a new direction. They've said, oh, I want to do this new thing, but no one wants to watch. And I'm like, yeah, of course they don't want to watch. You're doing a new thing. They watch you for this thing. You do a new thing. They're like, I don't like this. Even though they probably will like it if you just give them a little bit of time to adjust.
You see that with bands that completely change their sound, like, over the course of, like, one album. Mm. They usually cop, like, a lot of flack for it. But bands who slowly change their sound over time, of multiple albums, usually get accepted.
I mean, compare Taylor Swift to what they called Bring Me the Horizon, right? Bring Me changed their sound pretty much, like, they've changed it, like, pretty much every album.
A few times, quite a lot,
right? Whereas Taylor Swift has had, like, a very slow, gradual transition from country to sort of that sort of, like, the pop of the era that she was in the sort of 2000s, 2010s, to pop now to, like, out of nowhere, Folklore, right?
Yeah.
So it's, you see that almost wherever you look. Not super related to boredom, but interesting nonetheless. So boredom is generally, like I've said, considered unpleasant. You don't feel satisfied, and it's basically something you find uninteresting. And as I've said, it comes from that sort of mismatch between your sort of I guess ability level with something, like the sort of engagement you've got with it, right? So the ability level that you have with something and the difficulty level of what you're sort of up against.
Yeah,
that's just sort of one way that boredom can kind of manifest. As I've said, like, something's too difficult or too easy, it can be boring. There's also the meaning and attentional component, a model of boredom, which is the one we're going to talk about today. There are other sort of ways of defining boredom, but this is one that I found. So according to this model, it is sort of boredom is an emotion that signals deficits in attention and meaning. And it's not necessarily pleasant, but it's sort of a trigger to be like, hey, this thing, no, do another thing. This thing is not useful.
Yeah.
It's not fun. It's not, you know, it's not getting you anywhere. You need to switch. You need to change tactics and do something else. Right. And it kind of goes into talking about how boredom comes from a feeling of being, I guess, like, having low meaning. You know, if something objectively has, like, sort of meaning to it, a task has meaning to it, when you're bored, it feels like the task doesn't have meaning.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, if I'm, Jesus, let's think. If I'm doing the captions for Sci Guys and I get bored of doing it, my brain is telling me this is boring and pointless. You should go and do something else.
Yeah.
But objectively, I know no. This is a very important thing that I need to do, regardless of how bored I feel doing it.
Yeah. Because your brain's telling you, like, I'm not developing skills or anything useful for me, so I'm going to be bored, even though it's actually useful for other people.
The guy who captions our podcast is currently captioning about how Corey finds captioning boring. And I'd just like to say, I hope you're not bored. I hope you're having a good time. And you're currently captioning what I'm saying now, which is super weird.
I don't know how he does it.
This is a super strange thing to realize that someone is typing my words right now, and I hope they're not bored.
I find captioning to be the most tedious, like, long-winded thing.
Oh, yeah, that's why I don't do it. Yeah. That's why we've got Raul doing it.
Thanks, Raul.
Not that I find sort of captioning boring, but because sometimes I find it fine. And that's what I'm saying, what's interesting here, that something that can be boring doesn't always have to be boring. Do you know what I mean? Like, I could start trying to read, you know, there's been times I've tried to read a scientific paper and I'm like, Jesus, this is like pulling teeth. But then last night I was reading one. I was like, this is one of my favorite things to do in the world. I love this. And it's just a mismatch between sort of where you are at there and then and what, like, against, like I've said, what you're up against. So boredom isn't sort of a necessarily universal or constant feeling. It is entirely dependent on sort of what's going on inside of you at that moment. So different things can be boring at different times, you know? So a lot of other theories have sort of said that boredom is a sort of low arousal state. So you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, like unstimulated.
Yeah, yeah. But You know, according to this paper that I've obviously got linked in the description, it says that it's often associated with high and low physiological arousal. So the kind of idea of this is that, like I've said, a lot of people try to define boredom by its causes rather than by what it is. It's like trying to, it's what we talk about, you know, the same thing that we talk about when it comes to sort of gayness as a concept. People think of gayness as people think of gayness as a disease and not a symptom, right? And people often
please clarify
think,
what you mean by that.
I will clarify in
please
but a moment.
Gay is not a symptom of a disease.
And no. people think the same thing about boredom. People classify boredom almost as it's almost the reverse with boredom. People sort of classify boredom as a symptom rather than the disease. There are it's the same thing with boredom. People classify it as a symptom rather than disease. There are many causes for boredom, just like there could be many causes for someone being gay. You know, like diarrhea, for example.
That makes you gay.
No. Well, look, I honestly don't know whether diarrhea makes you gay or not. I'm not going to go out and say that, but I will say I'm fairly certain that diarrhea doesn't make you gay.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying. Might make you thirsty, though.
Oh, dear.
You saying that gays are thirsty?
No. Well, some of them are.
Some of them probably are. Statistically, right, neither.
Yeah.
If you're gay and you're listening to let me try that again. If you're gay and you're listening to this right now, please drink some water.
Even if you're not thirsty.
No, just drink.
Especially if you're thirsty.
It can't hurt for them to just drink some water, unless, of course, they've had almost the exact amount of water that it would take to kill them, and they drink some more.
In which case,
water poisoning.
You're culpable.
I don't think that would hold up in a court of law. I don't know.
Has that been tested?
I honestly don't think
this episode is being submitted into evidence.
Just cut this part out. Just cut it out. No. So,
wow.
In the
covering
murder
up evidence there, Corey.
In the murder case evidence, that is gays.
First you call them a disease and then you try to kill them. Wow. What are you? Yeah.
And
I
then
know
you try to cover up the evidence.
Well, yeah.
Three strikes. You're in prison forever.
That's how the legal system works. You go to court and they strike one. Strike two.
Strike three.
Strike three.
Off to prison.
Jail. Jail for you.
That's it.
Black people only get
you're
two
out
strikes.
If they're lucky.
Now, being out would probably be good, probably really fucking good when it comes to prison. Right?
Oh, yeah. No,
yeah.
You're in.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. So, according to the Mac model, the Mac model, the MEC, the the meaning and attention component model, boredom is an effective indicator of unsuccessful attentional engagement in valued goal congruent activities. Do you guys have any idea what that might mean?
Sorry, can you say that again?
So boredom is an effective indicator of unsuccessful attentional engagement in valued goal congruent activities.
So you have some goals. You have activities that are to do with achieving those goals. Yes?
Continue.
And then what's the first bit again? So you have goal congruent activities. So that would be activities that are to do with achieving goals that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was the first section?
Okay. Shall I just explain it?
Sure.
Yeah.
a failure to attend to those activities.
I think Corey was quite bored of my attempts here.
I just want to put you out your misery, man.
I was having a good time.
I'm sure you were, but never mind. I don't have anything to say to that. Really bored here. So the explanation comes in the paper. It says, put simply, we get bored when we are not able to pay attention or cannot find meaning in what we are doing.
Right. So, yeah, I find this really interesting because you also have, like, I think we have all these emotions that sort of rise up out of our unconscious or our subconscious, where like some systems in our brain or maybe in other parts of our body are like paying attention to what's going on, paying attention to what we're doing, analyzing it, and then coming to conclusions, I presume, in a sort of potentially in like a computational way or semi-similar to a computational way. And then, or maybe more like a neural network rather than computation. And then it provides us with an emotion as the sort of like outcome. So like if you're attracted to somebody or if you're scared or if you're anxious or whatever, some process has come to the conclusion and then that conclusion and then provides you with the emotion, attraction or fear or whatever you might feel to sort of motivate you towards or away from something.
Yeah.
Really weird.
I like thinking, and this is something that's just come to my mind right now, I like thinking of emotions as being the dumbing down of all of that sort of information.
Exactly.
So, like you're saying, you've got that underlying, like, information processing system, which we spoke about in previous episodes, the fact that there's so much going on in your brain that you're not aware of. So that's processing all this information. And then the sort of the dumb monkey brain up there, I say dumb monkey brain, it's you. You see the stuff that's thinking right now? It's you.
Is it? I thought it would be the prefrontal cortex is what you identify with now.
I mean, I say monkey brain as in...
I don't think that's monkey brain, is it?
No, that's why I was clarifying.
Okay.
Yeah. So monkey was used as an insult here rather than as a sort of, descriptive indicator of which part of the brain.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's just because people would talk about like your lizard part of your brain, which is like the base of your brain stem. Mm. And then there's the chimp paradox to do with your monkey brain, which I think is like your child.
Which is why I clarified, because I remembered that. So
cool,
glad we got there.
Yeah, monkey brain.
No. I got it straight away.
Thank you. True monkey brain fellow over here. So the you that's thinking right now, you think you're smart, you're dumb. Okay, you're dumb. So you need emotions to tell you what to do. Someone done something that could be harmful to you, or I could, reduce your ability to continue to survive. You feel angry. You get mad.
Yeah.
Grr. No. You stop this behavior that negatively impact me. Something come around that you can't fight, but could kill you anyway. Ooh, you scared. Ooh. Ooh, you scared, bro. you gotta be scared and stay still or run away, right? Emotions they're painfully complex. I'm dumbing them down incredibly. They're painfully complex, but in comparison to all of the sort of inputs that you're getting, they are very basic, right?
Mm.
You don't think?
Mm.
And so I feel like we tend not to think of boredom as an emotion so much as just an experience.
Yeah.
Would you agree? Yeah.
Yeah. So is it like, so you could see it possibly that boredom is like, If you're engaged in an activity, sometimes you can be bored when not engaged in an activity, of course. But if you are engaged in an activity and that activity is, you know, consuming calories in the form of computational power of your brain, and your brain can't work out why you're doing it. So it's just like, why are we doing this? This is costing us time. It's costing us energy. It's costing us all these things. Why are we doing it? That's the like lack of meaning, not being able to find a meaning in it.
I mean, I guess, and this is, I mean, I want to say to everyone listening, this is purely speculation on our part.
We know, well, you know some things, I know nothing.
No, as in I don't know this.
Okay.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, what I'm calling out my own speculation here.
Mm.
I don't know. I think that's a fairly sort of astute view of it. I think that, although I will say that the calories for the computational power of your brain, I think are lower than you would think. This is going back from what a teacher told me in high school, because I said the same thing as you, and he said,
No.
Compared to the other stuff you do. But I think that,
like, warm yourself up.
Exactly, right? But you're on the right track there in terms of, like, if you're doing an activity, the activity is going to be costing some kind of, it's going to be taking up some kind of energy.
Yeah, at least it's an opportunity cost of what you could otherwise be doing.
Exactly.
You could be involved in something productive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even then, when you're bored from not doing anything, it could be a signal to your, you know, saying, hey, you should be doing something.
Yeah, I often find, like, for example, when I get stressed, that stress is a response to the fact that there's something I've forgotten to do.
Mm.
Like, there's something I should be doing, and I'm either putting it off or I've forgotten and I'm getting stressed. And I'm usually doing something else as well, but, like, I'm getting stressed over something that I'm like, I have put off or forgotten.
Yeah, I feel like I get stressed a lot when I'm like, I can be doing other things. I could get stressed a lot and I'm doing other things, and that drives me to not do anything because I need to do the other thing that I'm stressed about.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I can't do anything. I literally, there have been weeks of my life, I mean, consecutive weeks of my life, that have just been gone from me just not doing anything. Because I'm like, oh, I need to do this thing. And I'm not allowed to do anything else till I do this thing.
Yeah.
But I don't want to do the thing.
No, you don't do it.
I don't want to do it. I don't want to do the thing. I don't want to do it. But talking about sort of emotions and feeling them, because, I mean, we'll get to the actual study that we're going to talk about in a bit, but talk about emotions and feeling them. I think it's really interesting having sort of anxiety and just every now and then feeling anxiety in your body and being like, where is this coming from? What has happened? Oh, nothing.
Cool.
Right. Well, I guess we'll just wait for this to stop. And, you know, like, your stomach is, like, going and, like, your brain is kind of, like, feeling, like, buzzy. And I'm just sitting there like, wow, this is tedious. This is a very tedious emotion.
That's really interesting. So is anxiety, like, because I always wondered, I always thought maybe anxiety was generally to do with misappropriating or misapplying the anxiety response to something actually meaningful, mm-hmm. like meaningless.
Yeah, that,
so like,
yeah.
like a trauma response. But can anxiety come from literally nothing at all? Like no stimulus, not a misanalyzed stimulus, a literally no stimulus misfire of some part of your body.
I mean, in my experience, yes.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I do get anxiety about things that don't deserve anxiety, which is why often I'll ask, like, you know, you'll say something and I'll ask a question. You say, well, that's obvious. I'll be like, yes, but I have anxiety. I'm like heading it off before my brain even goes there. I'm just, you know, getting a clarification before my brain is like, you should be anxious about this, right? But sometimes, you know, maybe if I've had a bit too much caffeine or something, my body is just like, something's wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's wrong?
Nothing.
Something.
Something. Oh. I'll get back to you.
Am I, is it really something wrong?
Nah. Oh, that poor bit of you though is just like, something's wrong. I don't know what, though.
No, man, I hate that bit of me. That bit of me winds me up.
No, it's a baby. Leave it alone. It's just trying to protect you.
But I generally get bored of feeling anxious sometimes.
Yeah.
Genuinely, because I'm just sitting there like, I just want to relax. This is boring. This experience has become tedious for me, you know? And yeah. I think it's interesting in that sort of like mismatch of like, well, I know that this anxiety is fruitless. So what? Can we stop this experience now, you know? And so what does boredom do? Like what happens when you're bored? We understand kind of what boredom is and where it comes from, kind of generally what the feeling is. But what happens when you are bored?
Do you become erratic?
Well, you can, actually, yeah. So, I mean, lots of different things can happen when you're bored.
Does that mean off the rails?
I literally read a story about someone stealing a tank and their explanation for why they did it was, I was bored. Apparently a lot of like crimes and disturbances, people have nothing to say, but I'm bored.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So when it comes...
You get that with like kids, don't you? If they're just like, if home's not a very nice environment and they're bored, they just go out and cause hassle.
Well, yeah, think about sort of kids with ADHD. I mean, like if boredom can come from understimulation, ADHD kids are understimulated like all the time. So they could be bored constantly.
Yeah.
Constantly. And then you act out because like you're bored. You're gonna do something, you know.
Yeah.
And as well, if you're like sort of you've got a smart kid that's understimulated, they could act out as well.
Do we know what neurotransmitters are released or not released when people are bored?
I didn't look into that. We can do another episode on the science of boredom.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. So this again, like, I want to be totally clear. The reason this one's called the shocking science of boredom is because I totally want to do another episode specifically on the sort of specific brain science of boredom. But this one was just an interesting story that I saw on Twitter and I searched up the article and I found it and I thought it was really interesting.
And that other episode will be called The Not-So-Shocking Science of Boredom.
Or The Boring Science of
the
Boredom.
The Boring Science of Boredom.
Yeah.
Plainly average science of boredom.
Yes. Nice.
Just a completely grey thumbnail.
Yeah, that's such a Vsauce move.
No title, no nothing.
So, binge eating. Boredom can be a cause for that a lot. You know, along with depression and anxiety, boredom is another sort of trigger for that. There's been studies about distractibility using driving simulators. People who are prone to boredom apparently drove at higher speeds typically than other people in the same study. They took longer to respond to unexpected hazards and drifted more frequently over the central line.
Central line?
The central line of the road. Oh, the central line.
I know.
They drifted onto the central line.
Man, they really got on the rails.
The worst line. I hate this stream.
Come on.
No.
On the rails this time.
Yeah, on the rails, exactly. Yeah. It was a reference to less than a minute ago.
I understand.
So, in a 2003 survey, U.S. teenagers said they were bored, were apparently 50% more likely than their less frequently bored peers to take up smoking, drinking, and illegal drugs. So, addiction can also be caused, or sort of, you know, drug use and alcohol use could also be caused by boredom, which makes sense. And especially like when it comes to binge eating, I eat when I'm bored. I mean, I've actually stopped doing that. That was a big thing for me. I would eat when I was bored all the time. Like at home, just eat when I was bored. At work, when I was working an office job, they had biscuits and snacks and stuff. I got bored there so often because I was had nothing to do. I would just eat because, like, what else are you going to do? It's something.
Yeah, I wonder if boredom has anything to do with dopamine. Sorry, I know I'm getting onto that. I'm stepping on the toes of this other really boring episode we're going to do. But like that, a lot of that dopamine
a
is
boring
like...
boring episode. Sorry, go on.
Ooh. It's like motivating you towards things, dopamine, isn't it? And if you're then finding yourself eating or smoking or like... Because with ADHD. Smoking, for example, you can take dopamine reuptake inhibitors to... Oh, that increases dopamine. I don't really understand how dopamine works then.
I think,
all right, ignore me.
I think dopamine works in that it's the anticipation where the dopamine is released rather than, I think a lot of people think that the dopamine is like, ah, yes, a rush of dopamine when reach goal. I think it's actually anticipation of reward that causes release of dopamine. Mm. I suppose, and again, speculation, I want to be totally clear with that. Don't take this. This is just speculation. I guess that when it comes to boredom, yeah, maybe there is less dopamine being released because there's a lesser anticipation of a reward when you find something unfulfilling or understimulating. You know, it is really interesting, this sort of science that we've got behind boredom here. So just to quickly recap, we've spoken about how there's different sort of causes for boredom. There's sort of the under challenge and over challenge aspects. I just want to quickly go over that sort of stuff again before we go on to the sort of study that we're going to be talking about today. So it's not just about paying attention or finding meaning. You gotta kind of have both to an extent. Do you know what I mean? So you can be bored if you don't have attention. You can be bored if you don't have if you feel like you're doing something meaningless. And if you're doing something you find meaningless and you can't pay attention to it, then you're gonna be like doubly bored. And there's sort of two different kinds of boredom that come from these sort of things. You know, there's sort of the attention deficit and the meaning deficit. And so they kind of feel different as well. I'm sure you've probably felt different, you know, there's different kinds of boredom, right?
Yeah.
Well, you've not felt boredom in a long time, Luke.
No, but there are different types of boredom. There is like boredom of, you're bored of what you're doing and there's boredom for, I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
So I'm bored.
Yeah. So it says here that meaningless boredom could be caused by meaning deficits and is often characterized by high arousal, feelings of sadness and loneliness, and distorted time perceptions, but most of all by the desire to disengage. Deficits of boredom are characterized by sort of difficulty concentrating, mind wandering, and inattention. And then you've got mixed boredom, which obviously is kind of a mix of the two, which kind of has obviously mix of those different sort of, I guess, symptoms or experiences rather, you know. And you've probably experienced those. It's just interesting that there's sort of, it's always interesting when there's science looking into this sort of nebulous feeling, trying to characterize it.
Yeah
Because it's very, when you think about it, it's very difficult to sort of pinpoint how boredom works.
And it might not even be one feeling. It might be like different types of feeling that we've classified all in the same word as boredom.
Absolutely. So we've also spoken about what boredom does. Generally, it can cause people to act out and do things that are probably not their best. Oh, Luke.
Sorry, bored.
What the hell?
My feelings.
I'm bored of being hit. Stop.
Slap me back then, if you're so bored.
Slap me back, he says, like a pirate. I'm sorry, man. I don't know. Whenever anyone says me, I think pirate.
Slap me back,
you
matey.
You must think pirate a lot, then.
I think it's so much, man. So why don't we get into this study? Luke, you've seen this study before, right?
Well, I've seen it a long time ago. Yeah, I've seen a video of it, actually.
Really?
Or at least a similar study, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And basically, yeah, the individual is put in a room. I can't remember whether there's like a control group who are like less bored, like they have something to watch or something like that. So basically, individual's put in the room. There's a little electric buzzer that buzzes them when they press the button.
Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves there.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
I apologize.
I was just curious if you'd seen the whole study.
Oh, okay.
So there were actually 11 studies in this sort of one paper. So kind of 11 sub-studies in this one study. And it said that, and I'll just read the sort of abstract there for you. In 11 studies, we found that participants typically did not enjoy spending 6 to 15 minutes in a room by themselves with nothing to do but think.
of course they didn't.
Well, Luke, 6 you to 15 minutes is you so short,
that.
Though.
I actually wouldn't mind that. I would meditate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is what I was.
Yeah.
This is exactly what I was thinking. I was reading this and I'm like, I'm really glad they didn't use Luke.
I would nap.
Well, you weren't allowed to sleep.
Wow, what?
Well, yeah, you've got to sit and think. You can't nap.
And don't add rules.
I've not even gotten to that. I've been... I've not gotten to the rules yet. So, they enjoyed doing mundane external activities much more, and many preferred to administer electric shocks to themselves instead of being left alone with their thoughts.
Jeez.
And most people seem to prefer to be doing something rather than nothing, even if that something is negative. We'll get to the sort of, that's the abstract from the paper. We'll get to the sort of criticisms of the paper once we've gone through it. But it's fairly straightforward. It's basically 11 different sort of studies where generally they put people in a controlled room. Sometimes they don't. We'll just go through chronologically all of the studies. It also starts with a quote from Paradise Lost, which I think is interesting. The quote is, "The mind is its own place, and in itself can make heaven of hell and hell of heaven."
Oh yeah, John Milton.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Let's just start my paper with John Milton.
That's the wankiest thing I've ever heard.
I kind of dig it. It's cool. I like it. But you know, so there were some unanswered questions that kind of directed the sort of course of this study. The idea is essentially that there's this sort of inward directed thought. You know, when you're thinking to yourself, you're sitting just like thinking, no outside stimulus, it's just all going up in your noggin. That's called default mode processing, and it's had a lot of sort of attention. You know all about
default mode.
Oh, we've got so many pictures of Jamp in default mode.
Oh yeah,
but I'm not engaging in
sim awaiting
off
instructions. Is that the default mode? Is that actually default mode?
Well, for Jamp, surely.
Oh, for Jamp, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Factory settings.
Yeah. You got to stick a little demo pencil mode up there.
Understimulated.
But despite sort of studies on this default mode processing, the study that we're looking at says that there were sort of two questions that were sort of unexplored. Bear in mind, this is back in 2014. It said, do people choose to put themselves in default mode by disengaging from the external world? And when they are in this mode, is it a pleasing experience? Right? So essentially, do people when they're, you know, like sitting, decide, okay, I'm going to think of myself. And when they do that, is it pleasant? Generally, one would assume no, which is why meditation is so bloody difficult, right?
Sure. Yeah. It was interesting because I wonder when you said like people who are bored experience feelings of like loneliness or sadness. I wonder whether that is actually that the feelings of loneliness or sadness are sort of a low level thing all the time. And then when there isn't stimulation, it's the only thing that's clear to you. It's like it's obvious when you don't have anything. Like if I was like constantly going, you suck. You said,
what the hell?
Really quietly all the time, but then there was always loud music playing.
Yeah, we were always like, I was always talking over it, and you were continuing to do that thing, and then suddenly I stopped talking. All you would hear was,
yeah, you suck. Like, you wouldn't say that the lack of Corey talking causes the feeling of you suck. You wouldn't attribute causation.
Like, interesting.
Like, yeah. I wonder if it's those levels, because we live in a society that sort of creates loneliness as well, like, that's quite prevalent. And like we have there's lots of people who are sad.
That's interesting. The way that I thought about it was, I guess not necessarily completely opposite of that, but it's more that when you don't have stimulation or when you're sort of thinking in yourself, your mind can wander and it can sort of lead you to places and there's nothing to sort of pull you out of that sort of spiral. Not that you necessarily would always spiral, but you know, if your mind is just wandering, it might lead you to sort of meet things that you often ignore, which
that's
is kind
what
of which
I,
no, which
what
is,
I mean,
no,
yeah.
I mean it's which is I mean I guess a similar if not the same.
Yeah, and because that is the thing of meditation is it's about noticing the kind of underlying things that are kind of the background of your experience and being able to go, well, now that I've noticed them and I know they're there, rather than avoiding them, I can actually do something about them rather than pretending they don't exist. And I have friends who've like, who I've noticed will like be very uncomfortable if it's quiet. And be very,
I hate silence.
Do you? Right.
I despise silence.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Fall asleep watching TV as a kid. Like, don't even need to watch it, but
yeah,
it
sure.
Do the same thing now. Absolutely abhor silence.
And yeah, and to me, my very unscientific way of making sense of that is that there's a low-lying, underlying discomfort in their experience of being themselves, and that they try and cover it up with, but I don't know if that's true. It's just how I've made sense of it.
I think. Well, correct me if I'm wrong.
That wasn't about you.
No,
I didn't actually know you didn't like silence.
Well, what it sounds like
I'll
you're
keep
saying
talking
is
all
that,
the time.
What it sounds like you're saying is that there is this sort of constant feeling of it that is sort of thrown into sort of stark contrast when there's silence. Whereas I feel what I'm saying, and this might be similar to what you're saying or the same as what you're saying. Okay. I think it's slightly different in that there isn't necessarily that low level feeling there. You're just, you can be prone to leading yourself there.
Yes.
And the stimulation that you receive distracts you from it. Right. So it's like, it's like Flappy Bird. Jesus Christ. It's like Flappy Bird, right? You tap the screen and the bird goes up.
Yeah.
You stop tapping, the bird goes down.
Yeah.
Tapping is like sort of external stimuli.
Yeah.
And sad feelings are down, good feelings are up.
Yeah.
Right? You distract yourself, and when you don't have that distraction, you let your mind wander.
Yeah.
And if it wanders, it can go to a place that you don't necessarily want it to go.
Yeah.
Which is why, you know, you could I could let my mind wander with a sort of I could let my mind wander and it could be generally fine. Like, it's not always, silence isn't always awful. It's just silence in some sort of, in some scenarios, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. There's a subtle difference between the two. Mm-hmm. But the same outcome, which is that that the source of the sad feelings is not the boredom or the understimulation. It's the inverse, i.e. stimulation, covers up or prevents, in the case of your argument, the delving of your mind into that section.
Sure. And again, we could both be right for different people. And also, we probably are. And this isn't necessarily universal to everything. Like, boredom itself could generally cause bad feelings.
Yeah.
People are complex and there are plenty of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
So, those are the unanswered questions I've set. So, do people choose to put themselves in default mode by disengaging from the external world? And when they are in this mode, is it a pleasing experience? And the paper sort of brings up studies that were done sort of recent at the time of the study, saying that sort of 95% of American adults said that they did one leisure activity in the past 24 hours, like watching TV, socializing, or reading. But 83% reported that they spent no time whatsoever relaxing or thinking. Which, yeah, I mean, it's, I tend not to sort of just sit and think intentionally. That just, it happens accidentally a lot.
Yeah, sure.
I'm like, you know, you're watching TV and then you're like, oh.
Whoever goes, I'm going to sit down and have a think now.
I have a think sometimes.
Do you? Yeah. Sit down and go, I'm going to think now.
Yeah. But not a relaxing, okay. Not a relaxing think. Sorry, not a planning think, a relaxing think.
A relaxing think.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
No.
I'm going to have a relaxing think. Yeah. Hello.
Well, yes. I think we can agree, all of us, everyone in the world, that you are an outlier when it comes to this.
Maybe.
You said at the top of this episode, you've not been bored in years.
Yeah.
That's probably why.
Probably because I just, when I am bored, I have a relaxing think instead.
Maybe.
Well, yeah, you can achieve sort of meaning out of that.
Yeah.
So that's probably a positive thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should be studying. Let's crack his head open and study him.
Please don't. I need that. For now, you can have it afterwards.
You won't need it once your head's cracked open, will you?
Well, I suppose
preferably not.
It's the kind thing to do, Luke. Okay. Please donate your head to science.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
if you insist.
So it also goes on to talk about external stimuli or lack thereof. So most research on daydreaming and mind-wandering at that point had been focused on task-unrelated thought, as in basically when people were trying to do an external task, but they let their minds wander involuntarily. And it's the sort of example here is like reading a book, which I love reading books, and I hate reading books because it's, I will go 5 pages and realize I have not taken in a single word of this.
Yes.
Because I'm like, oh, what? But like, genuinely, I was reading this book on capitalism a while ago, and it was really difficult for me to get through because, one, it was like really dense, and it was sort of a book on sort of, I mean, I guess sort of politics and in a way that I hadn't read a book before. But whenever it brought up something, I would always, my mind would wander and be like, oh, but what if this was like a story? Like, what if this was like a narrative? What if this was like a sci-fi story? It was the same when I was reading that other book about the hidden secrets of the brain. I was like, but this would be a really fun sci-fi story. And then I'd write that in my head and I'd be like, you know, 2 chapters down and hadn't taken in the rest of the book.
Useless.
Do you guys, please tell me this is a novel.
This is why I don't read much.
Absolutely. You're a writer. You're a natural writer. Yeah. You just see ideas and go, how can I make a narrative out of this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. Thank you, Luke.
Yeah.
Okay. So, this study went to sort of focus on complete sort of under, like no external stimuli, right? Generally, no external stimuli. So in studies 1 to 6, they used college student participants who spent time by themselves in an unadorned room for 6 to 15 minutes, depending on the study. And after they put all their belongings away, including like phone, laptops, everything like that, they put that away. That's when they went into the room. And there were the only rules that they had were that they had to stay in their seats and they had to stay awake. Very simple. Sit down, stay awake, that's it. And after that sort of period of thinking, you know, we call it the thinking period, participants answered questions on how enjoyable the experience was and how hard it was to concentrate, stuff like that. And the results of 1 to 6 were that most people said that it was difficult to concentrate. So 57.5% said that it was at or above the midpoint of the scale that they were using in terms of difficulty to concentrate, and that their mind wandered. 89% of them responded at or above the midpoint of the scale for sort of how much your mind wandered. And even though there was nothing competing for their attention, like there was absolutely nothing, you know, they were sitting in a completely sort of empty room by themselves. Mm. Nothing could take your attention away, and their mind was just wandering. They found it really difficult to stop that. And on average, they didn't enjoy the experience. 49.3% reported enjoyment that was at or below the midpoint of the scale. So, yeah.
2 stars.
No, not a very fun, not a very fun experience here. And so study 7, they told college AIDS participants to do this at home, which I thought was quite interesting. So the idea was that, is that like, how would this be sort of modified if they were in a sort of more familiar environment, you know, but still not allowed to do anything. And so they clicked a link to a sort of program that they had online when they were alone and had no outside distractions. And a lot of people found it really difficult to follow that. 32% said that they had cheated by doing something else.
Amazing.
Well, I'm glad that they responded that, because they were, you know, okay, go home and sit for 6 to 15 minutes, and they literally could not do it.
How many more lied about it?
Well, I don't think. Well, the fact that 32% said that they did, I don't think that many would have probably lied. Mm. I mean, some probably would. That's always a case of when you do a study like this. But still, the fact that 32% of them reported cheating.
Like, yeah, I cheated,
man. Like, I 6 minutes. I picked up my phone, man. So that was listening to music or looking at their phone or getting up out of their chair. And there was no evidence that participants enjoyed the experience more when they were at home. Which is really interesting, right? You think, oh, maybe you'll enjoy it less in an unfamiliar place that's got nothing in it. But at home, to be honest, I don't think, unless I had something to look at, right? There's a lot of stuff to look at in this room. I don't think I'd enjoy...
I would assume they'd enjoy it less.
Really?
Because you're in a place where you're like, usually you're like, I can get comfortable and do what I want. Mm. And suddenly you're not allowed to.
Oh, that's fair enough, yeah. That's interesting, you're like, yeah.
I do wonder about, though, the fact that they have been told they can't fall asleep.
Yeah.
Because then they are spending, it's not like that the data is just absolutely the baseline of the human brain, because they're also expending effort making sure they don't fall asleep in an environment where they presumably are warm, they are unstimulated, that it'll be perfectly normal or reasonable to think, I'll just go to sleep.
Yeah, but I think over 6 to 15 minutes, I don't think they're necessarily...
No, of course. You know, but I mean, like, I think whatever mechanism sends you to sleep might not understand the context. I've got 6 to 15 minutes in here.
Sure.
So like, it would be a perfectly normal, perfectly understandable response for the brain to go, well, there's nothing for me to do, I'm going to shut down.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think it was more just to stop people from trying to win it by going to sleep.
Yeah, of course.
As in, making the effort. So you could go...
Skipping forward into the future.
Yeah.
Which how I view it.
I love that. I love it. I want the thing to happen. May as well sleep.
Yeah.
Did that for my exam results. Fantastic. Just skip ahead and get them.
That's it.
Yeah.
Fast travel.
It's like for months after my exams. No. So they said that their enjoyment was lower at home when they were in the lab, apparently. So you were right on there. And it was harder to concentrate on their thoughts when they were at home, probably because there were more distractions around them. Again, it says that the differences there have to be sort of like taken with a grain of salt, essentially, because they didn't randomly assign them to a location. They were just at their homes. But apparently,
I did the 6 minutes in my television room where the walls are made of televisions. I'm so bored.
And they're we cannot stop the televisions by any means. Yep. Even the floor is a television.
Yep.
So Yeah, apparently it suggests that just thinking at home isn't any easier. Like, just thinking at home isn't any easier than doing it in a lab. Study 8, would they enjoy themselves more if they had something to do? So they allowed them to entertain themselves with their own thoughts, or to engage in external activities like reading a book, listening to music, or just going online. And so obviously there was one group that had to just entertain themselves with their thoughts, and the other group got to do something like, you know, fun. What, or something slightly more engaging, an external engaging activity, like going online, listening to music, that sort of stuff. But they were told, don't contact anyone. No interaction. You got to stay, like, you got to think by yourself, but you can do something else. Do you know what I mean? So no interact with anyone else. So you've still got that sort of internal thing, but you're allowed to have external stimuli. So non-social internet activity, right? And the participants enjoyed external activities way more than just thinking, and they found it easier to concentrate, and they said that their minds wandered way less. Which is actually, now that I'm thinking about this is really weird, because whenever I need to focus on doing work, I tend to do a lot of it in the shower or on the toilet.
Yeah.
Because there's very little going on in there to distract me. You know? I can just
The shower's really good.
It's fantastic. Yeah. I accidentally do work in there all the time. I'm just like, oh, I'll check my phone, and then I'm like, oh,
an email.
Well, I've written a Sci Guys episode now, so
you write with your phone in the shower.
Sometimes, yeah.
I used to think of YouTube video ideas in the shower, but I never like actively did work in the shower, as in like took a device in to work with.
I have my phone. I bring my phone into the bathroom with me, and it sits on the edge, like away from the water, and I'll sometimes pick it up to look at something or whatever.
Wow.
And then I don't know how it happens. I just end up doing work. Sometimes I'll sit down and just let the shower pour over me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, literally just
good sit down shower.
Yeah. Good sit down shower. Yeah. Get some work. So many episodes of the show have been written in my shower and on my toilet. Yeah.
Fun fact.
Nice to know.
Yeah. Just think of that whenever you're listening.
I will. I'm thinking about it now. Was this one in the shower? Or on the toilet? Where was this one written?
This one was actually written right here.
Ah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
No water involved.
Well, I was drinking some water.
It's not as fun.
No, there wasn't any water coming out of me or going on to me. No. Just going
coming
into
out
me.
Of you. Oh, yes. It's like, why would water be coming out? Oh, yes, the toilet.
I want to double check that you know what a toilet is for.
It's for sitting on.
Okay. We need to have a conversation.
Also, I'm bloated right now.
I have been for over 20 years.
When will I ever feel relief?
Ever since you outgrew those nappies, it's just been a real uphill struggle.
Wait, what do you mean outgrow nappies?
You still wear nappies?
Well, he doesn't go to the toilet, does he?
Who doesn't?
Oh, you mean have to get bigger nappies. I see.
Okay, so we've looked at those studies. We've looked at studies 1 to 8, you know, with the college students in different environments. What do you think might be something that we should look into at this point?
Electrocuting them?
No.
That's okay. What I was going to say.
So we've done study 1 to 8 with just college students. What should we do now?
Not college students.
Babies.
What the...
One of you was right. The other one...
I was right.
I don't want to talk about it.
I was right, wasn't I?
It turns out that having conducted a scientific experiment, babies don't like being left in a room on their own for 15 minutes.
No, baby, you're not allowed to cry. Stop crying.
Or fall asleep. Naughty fall asleep. Baby.
Listen to me.
Jam, if you were right, then both of you would have been right.
Yeah, because I said not college students.
Yeah.
Most babies are not college students.
Well, what age did Boss Baby go to uni?
Boss Baby didn't go to uni.
Wow.
No, I know.
What a king.
I know, he was a sort of more vocational
He was an entrepreneur.
Guy.
Oh.
I haven't seen that film, but I feel like I have, you know? I feel like I've seen it.
You've seen enough.
Have you done the Boss Baby Choose Your Own Adventure on Netflix? I have.
Oh, good God. You have to. You say that you are it's always like... busy and you always have things to do, and then you come out with something like that.
I did it like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I
it's
mean,
like
I feel
Bandersnatch
like
for Boss
you
Baby.
You definitely understand boredom then, don't you?
Yeah.
You've gone through every single one, find all of the Boss Baby
I wasn't
endings.
Bored. I just wanted to do it.
That is the most horrific thing I've ever heard on this podcast.
It's so much worse.
So, to see whether this difficulty with just thinking was... solely down to them being college students, which, you know, absolutely fair, because we shouldn't really be just testing college students, and a lot of the time we do just white college students. We do it so often.
Are they not indicative of the entire population, Corey?
You know what, No, generally
that's
not.
Surprising.
Not in this context.
Yeah, no. White American college students, nah.
I thought that would represent everybody from every culture.
That's very true. It's very true. Maybe they do. Who
maybe.
Knows?
Easy mistake.
We should do a meta-analysis of all the studies done on white college students in America and then all the other studies.
Well, it's like the Stanford Prison Experiment, which apparently we should do another episode on, by the way, because apparently that is less reliable than we first thought.
Because it was just all college students.
Well, I think we spoke about that in the episode, but I think the issue was more that a lot of it was fudged and not true.
Right. Okay.
But I'll look into it and I'll get back to you all.
Thanks.
But yeah, no, it's like looking at Lord of the Flies and saying, ah, yes, this is a human experience. Not rich little white boys on an island, you know? So they went to look at other people. They went to a farmer's market and a local church. The participants were between the ages of 18 to 77. The median age was 48 years.
Do they know that...
It's Christmas time at all? No.
No, do they know that by some crazy fluke... All those 18 to 77-year-olds weren't also studying at college?
Luke?
Yeah.
You would be fantastic at doing discussion sections for papers.
Thank you.
You are so difficult to do a podcast
with. Did you ask everyone if they were currently studying at college? If not...
No, Luke.
Yes, they probably did.
Okay, yeah, great. Yeah.
Although your study design is impeccable, honestly.
Thank you.
Well done.
What if they lied?
Wow, well, that's true.
I guess science has fallen. It's the last bastion of truth is gone.
33% of the farmers market participants later admitted to lying and actually being college students.
So, the same as in study 7, they did the study in their own homes. I mean, obviously, it's probably easier to get them to do that rather than going up to some 77-year-old and being like, do you want to come? Do you want to come to my lab?
Can we get in this box?
I want you to sit in my box for a bit. Oh. Although, actually, they could have just done it. They could have just fitted out like a van, a boring van, and people sit in it for 6 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
When we get some money, we'll do that.
The boring van.
Yeah. Oh, no. Elon Musk could be after us.
Imagine if you were looking at it and you were like, I wonder what that is, and you broke into it. And it was literally entirely boring.
And then you accidentally got locked inside.
But I feel like that'd be quite an interesting story.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You're doing it again, Corey. You're going, how can I make a narrative out of this?
Well, you break into a van and it's incredibly boring. And you come out and you try to explain it to people, but it's so boring. It's like, well, why are you telling me the story?
Why
but
is
in
it?
That yeah. sense, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Right?
It's subverted boredom.
But not really.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a film out of it. The most boring film of all time. So, as I said, they were doing it in their own homes, obviously, because you don't want to put them in the boring van. And the results were similar to what they found with this college student. So college students aren't the only ones that find it difficult to just think. There wasn't any evidence that the enjoyment of the thinking period was related to the participants' age, education, income, or the frequency with which they use smartphones or social media.
That's really interesting, because it means you don't get better at sitting alone being bored as you grow up.
Well, grow up, children probably are really poor at sitting and getting bored because they've got poor regulation of their emotions.
Yeah. But, sorry, as you age, as you become older and older.
This is something that I think is, I wouldn't take this from that study.
Okay.
Because this is a small study, right? It's not a study that's setting out to find this. It's just saying this is indicated from our study, which it's fair enough. Like this is something that I feel it's very easy to do, to see a study say this shows this and then to infer something from that. But I think with the sample size, they were looking at the fact that this wasn't the focus of the study. You said it suggests that, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I said it means, which is sort of incorrect. Okay. But I just would have thought that, yes, if you did a bigger study on this, you would find a trend, because older people come from a generation where there wasn't quite so much overstimulation. Like, we are so overstimulated in our generation.
Yeah, but then there could be understimulation as well. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, sure, okay.
It's the same thing as, people saying, oh, back in my day, on trains and buses, we used to sit and talk to each other, and you see pictures, and they're all reading fucking newspapers
and stuff.
Right? Like, I feel like people are fairly... There are large changes in sort of trends in people, but I feel like with very deep-rooted things, we are fairly constant, you know? And yeah, we could. The thing is that maybe I think the situation here is that possibly, you've got people being bored more often, due to the, our sort of current lifestyle. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're better or worse at dealing with being bored.
Right. Okay. You know? So they're, and they doesn't mean they get bored at a different speed.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Which is something that people often like to say, that, oh, you know, you get bored so quickly because you're so used to doing so many things. But maybe that's true. Maybe it's not. I've not looked specifically into that, so I can't really say anything solid on it, you know? Gosh, I hate not being able to find a word.
Concrete.
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 Yeah, yeah.
Concrete. Concrete.
So studies 10 and 11, would they rather do an unpleasant activity than no activity at all? Mm. So they had the same instructions to entertain themselves with their thoughts in the lab, but they also had the opportunity to experience negative stimulation, an electric shock, if they wanted. In the first part of the study, they were told to rate the sort of pleasantness of several positive stimuli and negative stimuli as well. So example given for the positive stimuli is attractive photographs, and the negative, an electric shock. And there was a quote from a BBC article from the person that ran this study, Professor Timothy Wilson. He said, it was kind of like a severe static shock. It wasn't a huge jolt, but it was a little painful. They seemed to want to shock themselves out of boredom, so to speak. So nothing, when you think of these shocks, it's not like, you know, electrocution, obviously, because you only get one and done. But it's also not, it's not nothing. Like,
that's it. Also an interesting thing to and strange thing to say, they also wanted to shock themselves out of boredom, because that's kind of like what you picked me up on just now. It's like, we can't say that that is what they're doing.
Yeah, it's a, I mean, he said they seem to
want, that's a hypothesis.
He's speculating there. Yeah. And we'll get to it in a bit. I think the way that that he talks about his results are and I see this a lot, you know, a lot of scientists kind of view the results as holding more water than they do. You know, which is like, fine, you did a study on a couple hundred people that showed this, don't say that your study shows that, like, you know, I don't know, you interviewed like 300 people and you found that you know, the younger ones really enjoyed looking at plants more. You can't then make the statement young people like looking at plants.
No, just that the young people you interviewed looking at plants.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's a level where we can sort of make that statement.
Yeah.
But one study that hasn't been reproduced with a relatively small sample size in one country.
Young people like looking at plants.
Okay, fine. Young
scientific
people.
Biological fact.
I'd be really interested to know if this effect, where like people prefer to be electric shocked over being like unstimulated, holds when they've become used to getting electric shocked. So, like, because it could be the novelty of, like, you don't get electric shocked very much. So it's interesting to get electric shocked. It's a new experience. Whereas if you, like, I get electric shocked all the time, would you still choose to get electric shocked?
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, that'd be a good follow-up study. Maybe you should do that. And it's actually probably pretty possible. You've got all those shocking games. You know those games where it goes around and it randomly shocks one of you? And so, yeah, people will absolutely shock themselves instead of being bored because it's fun. So, as I've said, the first part of this study, they rated the pleasantness of different stimuli, positive and negative, looking at photos, getting electric shocks, and the shocks weren't terribly strong, but they were strong enough to, you know, a little jolt, you know.
Yeah.
You definitely notice them, like a sort of like a really, really bad static shock.
Yeah.
Which is never, you know, usually that bad. And the people in the study were told to say whether or not they would pay to experience or not experience the stimulus again if they were given $5. So just to explain that a little bit more succinctly, they were told, okay, I give you $5. How much of that would you pay me to experience this thing again or to not experience this thing again?
Experience being electric shocked.
Any of the stimuli. So okay, how much would you pay to see this picture of the flowers again? Or how much would you pay to, you know, be electric shocked again or not be electric shocked again? And, you know, there were obviously quite a few people that said, okay, I'll pay X amount to not be electric shocked again. Right, if I was given $5. And this is something, bear that in mind, because this is something that's going to come up later. This is a little bit of an issue with the study.
What a fun way to make money. A lot of people in a room, make them so bored they electric shock themselves, and then charge them to stop.
Luke, that's more or less capitalism.
It's happened again.
It's not after dark. Come on. Let's not get stuck here.
Don't tell me I'm wrong, man. Like... Anyway, that's what being a landlord.
All I'm
is.
Saying is, don't open the can of worms.
The can of worms has been opened. It's been sitting on the table this whole time.
Let's ignore capitalism.
Let's just ignore the can for now.
Hate that can.
Capitalism.
Capitalism.
No, it doesn't work.
Capitalism.
Jap holding just
your
did the hand, gay.
Holding your bag of money.
Jap like just this. Did the gay hand for anyone listening.
But I'm holding a bag of money.
He is. Where did you get that bag of money? Can I have it?
My offshore bank account.
Really?
Oh, cool. Thank. Can I have it?
No. Oh, I thought you would have just taken it from under the desk where I keep lots of bags with big dollar signs on them.
Oh, I've never seen those so before. You do. You've
never seen my dollar sign bags?
No.
I have tons of them under
That's
here.
That's what I rest my feet on. I'm quite comfortable.
Use them as pillows, clean with them, shower with them. Yeah. You know, they're great. So...
Use them as toilet roll whilst you're writing Side Guys episodes.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's the cheapest toilet roll you can get, yeah. I assume. I've never gone to buy toilet roll.
Use a 50 to wet your ass.
Well, obviously, but only when I run at 100.
Yeah, exactly.
So, so we've got people that said that, oh, I'll pay this imaginary $5 to not experience being electric shocked again. And so... After that, they had the standard instructions. So the second part of that experiment, they had the standard instructions to just go sit in a room, a completely blank room, unadorned, with their thoughts for, in this case, 15 minutes. And if they wanted, they could press a little button that was sitting in front of them to get an electric shock. They tried real hard, and it says, we went to some length to explain that the primary goal was to entertain themselves with their thoughts, and that the decision to receive a shock was entirely up to them. So they didn't want them thinking, oh, you've got a shock. It's just, no. Entertain yourself with your thoughts.
No.
But there is the little button in front of you.
It's there if you want it.
I would click
the options there.
I would press it.
I would immediately press it. I would just want to know.
Absolutely, straight away.
Yeah. It's a really interesting study, actually, in terms of, like, you then place, if somebody is willing to say... give up $2 in order to not get electric shocked, you then place a price on how much they're willing to pay to not be bored.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting.
There is some issue with it. And you're right. Not an issue with what you're saying. I mean, an issue with this design of the study that we'll get to in a bit. And it is interesting that you bring that up because it kind of relates it. And a study about that specifically would be really interesting. But the way they've built this study, it throws some sort of questions in the mix there. It doesn't quite work.
Mm.
But like if, you know, that's not down to you at all. That's purely down to this sort of, not poor study design, but sort of something that was kind of missed.
Imperfect.
Yeah, imperfect. So a lot of people elected to receive the negative stimulation over no stimulation, especially men. 67% of men, 12 out of 18, gave themselves at least one shock during the thinking period. A lot of people were shocking themselves. So the range was 0 to 4 shocks. The mean was 1.47. So the average was 1.47, essentially. And that is not including one outlier who shocked himself 190 times.
I want to meet that guy.
A quote from Professor...
I was thinking that's few too many. A lot too few.
Well, a quote from Professor Wilson was, I'm not sure what was up with him.
No.
Direct
no.
quote.
No one is.
No.
I do get him though. That'd be me.
Hang on, how many times minutes? Of that is? In, how many times is that?
No, because I would be like, can I shock myself so many times that I don't notice it anymore, or like it doesn't affect me?
Because that's more than
so that's 12 times a minute at least.
Yeah. 12 times a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
That is.
That's once every 5 seconds.
Once every
5 seconds.
Wow.
That's fine.
No, yeah, that's not fine.
4 seconds break.
That's not fine. That's not fine that's at fine. All.
That means he can't go 4 or 5 seconds without stimulation.
Well, that's if you that was if, that if mean it's a he standard. Can't. That's mean a standard like, but it's not going to be like that. It'd probably be like, like he's just doing it.
He did it all in the first minute and then went
and then took a 14-minute rest.
Yeah,
but like you'd have to immediately just start shocking yourself. And interestingly, I'm pretty sure he was someone that said he would pay to not experience it again.
Oh.
What does this say about psychology?
People are weird, man. That's why you need to study a lot of people to get rid of all the
weirdos.
How loud are his thoughts? Well, he wants to suppress them that badly.
Well, put it this way: you put Luke in that room, and he just sits there like for. You come in after 15 minutes. He's like, no,
go away,
go away.
Starts levitating.
You put us in that room. We're just like holding down the button. So 25% of women shocked themselves. So. That was 6 of 24,
boring.
And the range was 0 to 9 shocks, the median being 1 shock, so the average being 1 shock.
That is a severe difference between men and women in that study.
Yeah. 67% of men, 25% of women.
Less than a third for women, and two-thirds for men.
Yeah, so this is... So those results, by the way, we're talking about, only included people that said they would pay to not experience it again. But I think the gender difference, it says here, the gender difference is probably due to the tendency for men to be higher in sensation seeking. But also, this is weird. I think that they, what they did was they changed the strength of the shock depending on gender.
Well, maybe depending on like, the size of your body.
Well, no, it wasn't based on the size of your body. It was based on on sex, really. So I think it was to do with the idea that I think apparently
it might be pain thresholds, but women have higher pain thresholds. I thought.
I don't know. Maybe it was higher for women. I'll get to it in a second.
Yeah.
But I do remember there was a sort of disparity there with the. With the sort of intensity of the shock, I think, between between sexes. But what it says here is that what is striking is that simply being alone with their thoughts for 15 minutes was apparently so aversive that it drove many participants to self-administer an electric shock that they had earlier said they would pay to avoid. I don't like this sort of conclusion to that.
Yeah, there's a lot of assumptions in there.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, there could be any number of reasons that they pressed it. And we'll get to that in a minute, because there was actually another study that looked into this after seeing this one. But sort of some further questions after this study is sort of why is thinking so difficult and unpleasant? And so the Professor Wilson goes on to say that one of the possibilities is that when left alone with their thoughts, participants focused on their own shortcomings and got caught in ruminative thought cycles, which is what we were talking about earlier. Mm. Apparently self-focus does not invariably lead to rumination, a finding that was confirmed in their studies, which again is like similar to what we were kind of saying earlier. That was kind of like my idea of like, you know, it doesn't always happen. You could lead yourself down thought paths and, you know, if with some people there's that sort of background noise, it wouldn't necessarily be present in all people, right? And so they offer, you know, a few explanations. And so it says, another reason why participants might have found thinking to be difficult is that they simultaneously had to be a script writer and an experiencer. That is, they had to choose a topic to think about. I'll focus on my upcoming summer vacation and decide what would happen. Okay, I've arrived at the beach. I guess I'll lie in the sun for a bit before going for a swim and then mentally experience those actions. Mm. Right? So that might be a difficult thing there.
Having been a scriptwriter, yeah, I'd electrocute myself.
And that's all he says. He's got scriptwriting days. Honestly, I find him. He's just shocking himself.
Got my hand in the plug. Please don't make me write a script.
Honestly, Rebecca has had to put all those little child locks on all the plugs.
I know,
the
little
plastic things.
Plastic cutlery, the whole shebang.
Can't get them out.
Whenever I open Final Draft.
that will definitely genuinely be your Final Draft. Apparently they said that maybe another thing they could do in the future is see if they had something planned out to think about beforehand, if it was easier to not shock themselves. And it says, there's no doubt that sometimes people are absorbed by interesting ideas, exciting fantasies, and pleasant daydreams. Research has shown that minds are difficult to control, however, and it may be particularly hard... to steer our thoughts in pleasant directions and keep them there. This may be why many people seek to gain better control of their thoughts with meditation and other techniques with clear benefits. Without such training, people prefer doing to thinking, even if what they are doing is so unpleasant that they would normally pay to avoid it. The untutored mind does not like to be alone with itself. But also, I think there's just morbid curiosity.
Right? Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
they're not being told that this is what's being studied, so they're just like, wonder what that's like.
And I was like, you know, novelty. You've experienced it again, and you're like,
what was that like?
You know, and I think that's probably one of the reasons. Yeah,
it wasn't so bad.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad that they're motivated away from it.
Yeah, and I think that's again, that's probably why the mean was so low. You know, the range being 0 to 4 shocks, the mean for men, and the mean being 1.47. So a lot of people were doing under one, sort of one.
Done.
Yeah, just I'll try that again. Yeah. And for women as well, 0 to 9 shocks was the range, but the mean was 1.
Mm.
Yeah. So
there's a few outliers there, like there was with that man who did it way too many times.
190.
Shockers Georg is an outlier and should not have been counted. Sometimes I reference memes and I'm like, are kids going to get this?
No.
I didn't get this.
You didn't get this?
Shockers?
Spiders Georg?
What?
I'll show you.
I don't even understand this.
So you've not seen that Tumblr meme?
I wasn't on Tumblr.
Okay, it's like this does not need to be on pod, but I'll quickly go through it. Right? It's like, oh, you eat like, you know, apparently you eat like 7 spiders in your sleep every year.
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
This is not true. Right. The average person eats 0 spiders, But Spiders Georg, who lives in a mountain and eats only spiders like every day, was an outlier, and Adam should not have been counted.
Dragged the average up.
That is amazing.
It's fucking hilarious, right?
So good.
I think of Spiders Georg all the time. I can't believe Spiders Georg has been lost to time.
Why do they keep counting him?
He's an outlier. He should not have been counted. So, yeah, let's think about some of the issues with the study. Have you guys got any ideas what issues might be with the study before I just quickly run through them for you?
Only the ones that we've sort of mentioned, mm-hmm. which is about how people, like, they're drawing conclusions that mm-hmm. might not be the Assuming. Actual reason. Like, it yeah. might be interest in novelty, or it might be, like, don't know.
I feel like they should have questioned them afterwards and been like, why did you press it?
Yeah.
Why did you want to shock yourself?
That'd be interesting. I think that's more qualitative than quantitative data, though, which is difficult. Yeah. It's difficult to standardize that into a study.
Yeah, but if they all said, because I hate myself, then you know you've not got a representative sample. Or the world's got a really big problem.
So the main thing here, and a few of the main things here, is that the level of shock, like I mentioned, was higher for men than women. And that was based on early results wherein women rated the shocks as more painful, but it wasn't varied between individuals. And this is one of those things that always winds me up when we do gender lines, and it doesn't necessarily help. Like, sorry, if we think that generally women have a higher pain tolerance, but in this study they found that women were sort of more likely to rate the pain as being higher, do it based on the individual rather than based on, you know, just arbitrary sex groups, right? It's really frustrating. Is that something that frustrates you when you see an arbitrary line drawn?
Well, I guess you'd have to look at the data. If there's two very clear, like, humps in the line of where people are generally rating like 5 on the pain scale, then kind of fine.
Yeah.
Because you might not have the time to calibrate every single person's pain scale. And if you have very clearly, like, the majority of women are rating their 5 here and the majority of men are rating their 5 there, maybe fine. Although I'm not scientifically trained, so I don't know.
Not fair enough.
But but we'd have to look at where that data falls.
So this was this is coming from an article that I read. It said some UK researchers have questioned aspects of the study, including the level of shock. So this is coming from researchers that have said this seems like it's a bit of an issue. Apparently individual pain thresholds vary widely. And also the thing that I was kind of hinting at earlier is that hypothetical payments could exaggerate people's answers. So because if you think about it, if I say, oh, if I was to give you £10, how much would you like pay me to not hit you in the face? Well, it's an imaginary £10 and I don't need to think of it as my own money. Whereas if I was to say to you, how much
you'll
of your
get
own
£10
money
at the end of this study?
Yeah.
How much of it do you want to give to me now to not be electrocuted again?
Well, no, that's still hypothetical money to answer.
No, but
the question.
You actually will get £10 at the end of the study.
But it doesn't make a difference, though.
No,
because it's hypothetical money still.
But you will get the £10.
Yeah, but it's still hypothetical
until you get it.
Okay.
Well, you give them the £10, right, and then go, how much of that you want to give me to not shock you again?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think the reason that they said the £10 that they, as in, oh, we'll give you $10. If we gave you $10, how much of it would you give away to not get this again? I guess off the top of my head, that would probably be to try and account for people's differing socioeconomic status or different, like, you know, level, like amount, how much money they've got. But also,
it doesn't, though.
It doesn't, because
£10 is different to different people.
If you're, if you've got like 100 sitting in your bank account, $10 is going to be worth less to you than someone who's got £1.
You'd be like,
bank,
please shock me a lot and pay me for everyone.
Give me money. Yeah, exactly.
That's the guy who was pressing it 150 times, thinking he was going to get $10 for every
press. Oh, I'm going to be a millionaire.
So Professor Wilson said that he wasn't saying that humans were incapable of contemplation. He said, I don't want to exaggerate this. I do think that all of us in our daily lives do find our minds wandering to pleasant topics or thinking about something we're looking forward to. I think what's hard is doing this on the spot. Which is fair enough. If you're just told, sit and think, you're not necessarily prepared for it. It could be difficult. It's something you kind of need to get into a flow with. Professor Ivo Vlaev, who is a behavioral psychologist at Warwick University and Imperial College London, said that the findings are very interesting, but the electric shocks could be overemphasized. The bottom line is that they felt miserable, he told BBC News. Research has shown that happiness is not only about experiencing pleasure. You need a sense of meaning and purpose, which you lack in these conditions. And when you have the task to do, you have that sense of purpose, even if it's a simple task. Dr. Chris Chambers, a senior research fellow at Cardiff University School of Psychology. He was less impressed with the results. This is all from this BBC article, by the way. He said, this is essentially a study showing that people don't like to be bored. He told BBC News, how this could take up 11 experiments in a major scientific journal is a little mystifying. The most interesting aspect of the study is that their research subjects prefer to give themselves electric shocks rather than experience boredom. Perhaps the subjects simply did it to stay awake, and having now read the author's paper from beginning to end, I can understand their plight. Boom. What a burn, right?
I wonder, like, it kind of as well, it's like, if you imagine, rather than like, don't like to be bored, mm-hmm. as like, you know, the concept of boredom, I guess it sort of suggests, at least to a certain extent, that the subjective experience pain is less undesirable than the subjective experience boredom. Because there is that thing,
depends on the level, but yeah.
Yeah, because there is that thing about how the human emotional system evolved by hooking into the physical pain system in the brain. I believe that's correct. I don't know whether that also includes boredom, but boredom, I suppose, could be considered an emotion. And if boredom, the emotion, is hooking into the pre-existing circuitry for pain in the brain, then it's not, they're kind of interchangeable. If you're like, I'm feeling this thing, I will externalize it, and it's going through similar systems in the brain. That makes sense?
I get what you mean, yeah. Definitely, yeah.
It also just sort of, to me, this is just like evidence of like, we're not very good at training our minds in the West, and we should probably do a better job.
Absolutely.
It's just evidence of the fact that we're not very good at that.
We're not supposed to be. But like,
no, I know.
Imagine training someone's, if people trained their minds, you would probably have fewer people working jobs.
Lest we not consume.
Look, if you do not want, you do not consume. And if you do not consume, then this system falls apart. Yeah, are you thinking?
Yeah.
Manufactured inadequacy.
He did it again. He did it again.
Oh, I thought I was being sneaky there. Yeah. I didn't say the words. So I looked up another study that followed this one from different researchers. And it said, did participants shock themselves because they were bored, monotony, or because they were sad, negative feelings from boredom, right? So you know what I mean? Do you get what this is asking? Because in the original study, you can't tell whether they were shocking themselves because they were bored or they were shocking themselves because they were feeling sad because they were bored, you know?
Right, sure.
So,
is that not the same thing there?
No, is the shocking to break the monotony, or is the shocking because it's a more pleasant experience than the negative experience?
Yeah.
Which is kind of what you're talking about there.
Yeah,
right?
emotional system.
So I'm not going to get super into this because, you know, I've got a whole lot of stuff here. It's linked in the description. It's really interesting. I would definitely recommend reading through it. But essentially what they did was they showed some people some sad films, and they also did a similar thing where they sat them in a room. And I think they had chocolate an electric shock button. And I can't remember whether they were together or whether they were sort of separate, the chocolate and electric shock. But essentially what they found is that, yeah, the shocking was because of boredom. So during watching the sad film, people were more likely to eat the chocolate. During sort of boredom, people were more likely to shock and eat the chocolate. So if you had chocolate in front of you and you were doing the boredom thing, you're more likely to eat chocolate than you were when you were watching the sad film. And same for the shocks. You were more likely to shock yourself when you were being bored rather than watching the sad film. And so what they kind of gathered from that is that negative feelings aren't what cause people to do the shocks. It's just the monotony. Obviously, the study isn't necessarily perfect. It's difficult to study these sorts of things, but it is some more evidence there to suggest that it's the monotony that's causing people to shock themselves, because it's like something different, you know. This is novel, this is something interesting. So it is interesting there, when you look at it as a whole, the shocking science of boredom, that people will literally give themselves electric shocks rather than sit with their thoughts for 15 minutes, which is insane, right?
Yeah, I think we should try it.
No.
Live demonstration.
No. Lots of YouTubers. Part two. Stick him in a room.
Okay, how about this? We will upload a bonus video of the three of us sitting in silence for 6 to 15 minutes. We will film it at some point soon.
Let's start now.
No.
Okay.
We don't have the time to sit.
We're going to get an electric shock pen each.
Oh, no. No shocks. Just sitting for... And that can be the content. That'll be the content. Yeah.
All right, well...
That's going to be so hard.
If you want that, go to Patreon, I guess.
Yeah, go to Patreon to see us sit for 6 to 15 minutes. Yeah. Come on, how funny would that be?
Not very.
I think not while filming.
I think it'd be really funny to upload a video of us just sitting doing nothing for 6 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Be great.
Okay.
Cool.
I'm down.
Let's do it.
Okay. Let's do it.
So that is the end of this sort of, you know, the show. But there's still one little thing we got to do first.
The quick fire quiz.
Dun, dun,
quick
dun, fire dun. Quiz. Shocking edition.
So the quickfire quiz is very simple. It's very straightforward. There's the same rules every single time we do the quickfire quiz. I will ask one question between the two of you, and the first person to buzz in with the correct answer after finished asking the question wins. What do they win, Jamp?
Oh, nothing.
Gosh darn right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you both.
Yep.
What are your buzzers? Luke, what's your buzzer?
Obviously.
God's sake.
I knew it.
So you always ask him first, then I get the bad one.
Well, because you get to say stuff before he does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your buzzer?
And I always get the bat. Well, I have to think of one now.
Of all the buzzer sounds in the world, I can't believe that there is only one good one that Luke gets first. Think outside the box. Don't go for the obvious answer.
You can go for the scream of being electric shocked if you want.
Mm.
Just go for a board sound.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. 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 Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. Very good. Mm. That's a little bit too. Mm. That's a little bit too aroused. Mm. We want some low arousal board in here.
Okay.
Dear me.
That's what I want.
So the question is, stop that. So the question is, what was the most number of shocks administered by one person in the 2014 study? I didn't finish asking the question. Luke.
Ask
yeah.
Oh.
What is your answer?
190.
Ding, ding, ding. That is correct.
Well,
you
done.
Win. I was going to say electric shock, but I don't have anything to do that. So just try and give yourself one. And I think that is more or less it. Before we go, I also want to tell you guys, you know, to check out our Discord, obviously. And we've got a new show over on our Patreon. It's Sci Guys After Dark. It's a whole new podcast just for you. And, you know, just because Sci Guys has ended, it doesn't mean that the conversation has. So if you enjoy us just chatting, go to our Patreon and check out Sci Guys After Dark.
Yeah.
Anything else you guys want to say?
No.
I'm bored.
Bzzz.
Very good.
I want to shock myself.
Shocking.
No. Shocking.
Before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to Executive Producers Ashley Miller and FinTZ. And also, thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday, and why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can join our community on Discord, or you can find a goddad to us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com. I am not Corey everywhere.
I'm Jempkin everywhere.
I'm Luke Cutforth everywhere.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.